September 27th in the year 2000, we are finally meeting a year later with Milt Fine. This is Judy Rubenstein and Bess Karelitz interviewing. When we left you last year, Milt, you were just starting to tell us about some of your businesses and when you went into the promotions and so forth, and then starting into a few shopping centers, I think. So perhaps you want to tell us once you left the law practice and then how you got into the hotel business.
This happened in the early 1960s. It probably was about 1960. And at that time, Ed Perlow and I were partners. We had been law partners, and we had become business partners. And we were doing some real estate syndication, which is a technique for acquiring real estate and selling pieces of the ownership to investors. And we had done that with a number of different kinds of properties. We looked at a small motel in Erie with the intention of syndicating it, and also with the intention that the man who was selling us the property would continue to operate it under a sale-leaseback. After investigating the transaction, we decided that it was one that we wanted to enter into. We did that, and within a couple of weeks after we had acquired ownership of that motel, the man who sold it to us and who was the operator suddenly died. So Ed and I were faced with the situation of owning this motel and having nobody to operate it. And we, of course, knew nothing about the hotel or motel business, but we had no choice but to do the best we could. So we got in our car, we drove to Erie, and we took over this motel. And we spent some time there really learning about how it was run from the employees. And we selected somebody to be the manager. We spent some more time with them developing a marketing plan and a business plan. And although we stumbled and made a lot of mistakes, eventually we seemed to learn what we needed to know, and the motel did rather well. And that was really the beginning of our entry into that business.
And this was the year 19...
It was probably 1960 or 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, about several years later, we decided that since we now knew something about the motel business, we would build another motel. And we bought a piece of land in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, which was on the Pennsylvania Turnpike at the intersection of Interstate 81. And we felt that this was a very key intersection in Pennsylvania. The Turnpike was obviously the leading east-west highway, and we felt that Interstate 81 would become a very important north-south highway. So we were able to buy a piece of land, and we built a Howard Johnson Motel there. I think my recollection is right. It has approximately 98 rooms.
Was it hard getting the franchise for the Howard Johnsons in those years?
No, it actually was not very hard to get the franchise. Howard Johnson was one of the leading motel companies at that time. They certainly were leaders in the restaurant business. And they were actively looking for franchisees. Their method of operation was to franchise more than to operate hotels themselves. And like the original motel, it was a fairly simple operation because Howard Johnson operated the restaurant under a lease. So it was our job simply to operate the motel. It was a small motel, had very little meeting space. There were no bars or convention facilities or anything like that. Essentially a place where people who needed a room stopped on the highway. What was difficult about that project was getting the money for it, financing it. We syndicated the equity, and we eventually found a savings loan in York, Pennsylvania, to give us a mortgage. And that motel was also successful. On the strength of that, we decided to build another one in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And then we bought several other motels in Pennsylvania. We bought one in Allentown, and we bought one in Breezewood. And at the time, Howard Johnson was a very strong label. Felt they had the best room in the business. There was a lot of good technological features in the room, such as a remote button for the TV, which was unusual then. And all of these motels were quite successful. And we did that pretty much throughout the decade of the 60s.
Were you also involved in other businesses as well at the time?
We were still practicing law at the time. We did not feel that we were firmly enough rooted in the hotel business to give up our law practice.
And did you specialize in a certain area of law when you were practicing?
We had a fairly general practice, although there was probably more real estate and corporate work than anything else.
So you stayed mostly in Pennsylvania because it was close and a comfort feeling?
At that time, we were exclusively in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
We naturally looked for projects that were close by, that we were familiar with, that we could run from our base in Pittsburgh. We were fortunate enough to find a number of very good projects in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. From there, in the late 60s, we began to gravitate towards a different kind of hotel business. And I'll tell you how that came about. We had, Ed and I had returned from a business trip to Allentown, and we were driving home from the airport on the Parkway West, and we reached the Fort Pitt Tunnel, which was fairly new at that time. And we started talking about how dramatically the tunnel was changing the Parkway West. A great deal more traffic now. It was a much easier drive from the airport into the city. And we were speculating that there would be a great deal more development occurring on the Parkway West as time went on. And from that, we talked about the fact that there was probably need for a good hotel somewhere on the Parkway West between downtown and the airport.
And of course, we're talking about the city of Pittsburgh.
Right. And at that time, you still had a lot of roadside motels. And hotels were generally in the center city, in the downtown area of those cities. There was just beginning to be some development of hotels near airports and in suburban areas. But there wasn't a great deal of that. And our conversation was that the downtown area had some disadvantages. There were problems parking there, and a lot of people who had business in the city didn't really want to be downtown. They wanted to be closer to the airport, had surface parking instead of parking indoor. And from that conversation, we quickly came to the conclusion that this kind of a hotel would probably work very well and that we ought to do it. And we quickly then began to look for a site. And we really found two sites. One was in Greentree and one was in Montour. And we liked Greentree because it was very close to the city, so people could stay at Greentree and still do business in the city, and yet it was easy to get to the airport. And there was also some office development occurring in Greentree, and we felt that there would be more of that. And we liked Montour because it had easy access to the parkway and was very close to the airport. But we concluded that Greentree was better because of its proximity to the city. So we started to look for a site in Greentree. We looked at a number of possible locations, and then we found the site that where eventually we did the Greentree Marriott. And it was a difficult site because it was on a hill. It was actually on several plateaus. And although you could see it clearly from the parkway, it was rather difficult to get there. You had to make a number of turns off the road, and we had a concern that people might have difficulty finding it. But we finally concluded that the most important thing was that it was visible. Everybody knew it was there. Was in the marketplace, and people would figure out how to get there. But the local banks and savings and loan associations that we talked to didn't see it that way. They thought that it was not a good site, and we were unable to get a mortgage in Pittsburgh. So we scoured the country, and we finally found a lending institution in San Francisco that would agree to provide the mortgage. And they did that. And again, we syndicated the equity. We built the hotel.
How did you get to Marriott, though?
Well, let me back up. We knew that we needed a franchise, a label. We couldn't call the hotel Fine's Friendly Inn or Ed's Beds. We needed a name that was well known. So the obvious names were Hilton and Sheraton. But they both had hotels close enough to that location that they were not willing to franchise. And Ed and I had spent some time in Washington, D.C., and we were impressed with the Marriott hotels there. Although Marriott was relatively new at the time, they probably didn't have more than 12 to 15 hotels altogether. Whereas now they have thousands.
And this was also in the 60s?
This was in the late 60s, right. And we had actually stayed in one of their hotels. We thought they were well designed, well run. We had met some of their management people at hotel conferences. So we decided to try and get a Marriott franchise. And we met with Marriott in Washington. They liked the location. They wanted to be in Pittsburgh. But they were not willing to franchise because they felt that we didn't really know enough about the hotel business. And Marriott particularly emphasized restaurants, convention facilities, things that we didn't have in our motels. It was a different kind of business than running roadside motels. And they felt that we were lacking in that area. But we persisted, and then we hired a man who had been with Howard Johnson in the food and beverage area. And we were able to say to Marriott, well, we've gone out and we now have the expertise in food and beverage. And Marriott was still reluctant, but we remained persistent. And finally, we persuaded them to franchise their name and to let us operate a hotel that would be called a Marriott.
Did they not have the training programs then?
They did,
but they still felt that the owner of the hotel should have some expertise in how to run their type of hotel, particularly food and beverage. Marriott has always been very careful who they franchise to. Unlike Howard Johnson and Holiday Inn, they've always been very selective, and that's been one of the ways that they've maintained their preeminence in this business. They're very careful about the quality of their hotels, and the skill in managing it, so they have very high standards. And ultimately, of course, that was very beneficial for us as holders of their franchise. And in retrospect, if I had been them, I probably would not have given us a franchise. But apparently we were able to talk them into it. And the hotel started out very successful. And we expanded it, I believe, 3 times because the demand was so strong. And it went from about 220 rooms to about 500 rooms.
And now, 500 rooms?
Approximately 500 rooms. And that's how we made the leap from the small motel business to the hotel business. Want me to just go
sure,
on?
Sure, please, go on. What, okay. And then how did Interstate, or was it called Interstate?
Well, we formed a company to do this, and we called the company Interstate. Actually, we called the company originally Interstate Motor Lodges because we were doing these motor lodges in places like Carlisle and Scranton and Allentown. And later we changed the name to Interstate Hotels. But we were originally emphasizing locations on the interstate highway system, and that's where the name Interstate came from.
All right, then did you continue to buy other motels, or how did you evolve?
No, after we did Green Tree, we concluded that we didn't want to be in the motel business anymore, and we gradually sold off the motels that we had. But we were very interested in developing other hotels similar to Green Tree. There really were not many of those hotels at that time, and there were not opportunities to buy them. There were more opportunities to build them. So the next hotel that we did was Providence, Rhode Island. And it was very similar to the Green Tree Hotel.
Now, when you're talking about the syndication, would you explain that a little further?
Well, we didn't have a great deal of money ourselves, neither Ed nor I. So when you built or bought a hotel, let's say it cost $10 million, you might get a mortgage for $7 million, so you needed $3 million of equity, similar to buying a house. We didn't have $3 million or anywhere close to that. So we went to people that we knew, clients, friends, relatives, and ask them to invest. And somebody might invest $20,000, another person $10,000, somebody might invest $50,000. And we would raise the equity money by means of those investments that people made. And we would put some money into it, and we would get, usually we'd be in charge of management, so we'd be paid for that. And if the investors got a certain return, then we would get a greater return for ourselves. And that's how we raised the money.
And was that a somewhat common practice at the time?
It was a practice that was relatively new. It started in New York in the 60s, actually. I remember reading the New York Times and reading an article about it, and it sounded like a good idea to me. And I went to New York, and there was a lawyer who was teaching a two-day course on syndication, and that's how I really learned about it. And I came back and started to do it, and I knew more about it than anybody else in Pittsburgh because I had spent 2 days on it, and nobody else had spent any time on it. And actually, as a lawyer, I was invited to speak before various groups of lawyers and explain syndication. So people were very interested in that as a technique. So the second hotel that we did was Providence, Rhode Island, and we did that. We finished Green Tree, I think, in 1971. And then we did Providence several years later.
Approximately.
We did that in probably 1974, and that was Providence was an industrial town, not dissimilar from Pittsburgh, and the location was in the city, near the state capitol, but right next to the interstate highway system, right next to Interstate 95. And Providence was a good business town, and it had very few hotels. Probably the most prominent hotel was a Holiday Inn that was not in good condition and yet was doing a very substantial business. So that said to me that if that rundown Holiday Inn is doing so well, there must be a pretty good demand here for hotel rooms. And if we build a good hotel, it will do even better. Now, we did a great deal more feasibility work than that, but that was, but that kind of sums it up. So we built that hotel, and we built that with a partner who brought us the deal.
Who was the partner?
His name was Arthur. I'll think of his last name. And he lived in Providence. And he was familiar with the site and got the idea for doing a hotel and went to Marriott. And Marriott said, we don't want to do it because Providence is too small for us, but maybe Interstate will do it. They just did this hotel in Pittsburgh, and they're pretty good operators. So he came to us, and we became his partner. And we built that hotel. It was also successful. And we just went on doing more and more hotels like that.
Did you, architecturally, did you use some of the same ones or same plans from here or the builders, or did you do it in each locale?
These were not cookie cutter hotels. Right. Every site was different. Every market was different. So we used architects. For a while we used some architects from Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. We used architects from other cities. We used contractors, usually who knew the specific markets that we wanted to build in. But each hotel had different characteristics. The rooms were very similar, but the public space had to be suitable to the market that we were building the hotel in. So, at any rate, we during the period of the 70s and into the 80s, we just kept building hotels like that. We built the one in Syracuse, Harrisburg. We were largely building them in secondary cities because Marriott wanted to build in the major markets, the New York, Chicago, places mm-hmm. like that.
And you were still carrying the Marriott name, though.
What's that?
You were still carrying the Marriott name.
We built exclusively under the Marriott name. And that name became more and more prominent in the hotel business. Of course, today Marriott is clearly the preeminent hotel company. And we were certainly helped in our success by having picked Marriott at a very early stage as the horse we wanted to ride. And eventually we became their largest franchisee.
And how many did you finally?
We probably ended up with somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 Marriott hotels. Mm-hmm. We probably had at one time about 15% of all the Marriotts.
Wow. So you obviously had a nice ongoing relationship with them?
We had a very strong relationship in a sense we were joined at the hip. We had so many Marriotts that it was very important for us to get along and work together. We obviously had lots of differences, but we were always able to resolve our differences. And we had a very strong and positive partnership with Marriott. Really from the late 60s until we sold the business in the late 90s.
Now, in the interim, did you also manage other hotels?
As time went on, we began to go into the third-party management business, and we did that to some degree because we responded to opportunities. In Syracuse, for example, the owners of the Carrier Corporation wanted to build a Marriott hotel, Carrier Air Conditioning Company. Their headquarters were in Syracuse. But they didn't know how to operate it, so they wanted to find an operator. And they came to us and asked us if we would help them build the hotel and if we would operate it. So that became a management contract. And we picked up other management contracts also. But in the 1980s, building became more difficult. Interest rates became very high. The economy was changing. And the hotel business became somewhat troubled. And lots of hotels were owned by insurance companies, banks, other financial institutions. They were owned either because they had acquired them for investment or they had foreclosed on them. And they were looking for opportunities to make them better, to improve the results. And by that time, we had a very strong reputation throughout the country as a very good manager of hotels. So we were able to get a lot of that business. Management business grew very strongly during that down period. And we acquired management contracts for hotels like the Helmsley Palace in New York, the Sam Moritz in New York, the Bonaventure, Los Angeles, which was the biggest hotel in Los Angeles, the Don Cesar in St. Petersburg, major resorts in the south, and many, many other hotels.
How many hotels would you say you might manage then?
Well, totally, our high point was about 250 hotels, some of which we owned, some of which we managed. We probably managed more than we owned.
So you became the largest management?
Independent management.
In the world?
In the world. Independent being a company that didn't have a label. We never had our own label. We never wanted to have our own label. By being independent, we were able to do business with everybody and to manage any kind of a hotel.
When you managed these hotels, did you mostly work with the people they already had in place, or would you do the hiring and firing, or would you send people from here?
Well, it was our responsibility to see that the hotels were well run. We usually brought in our own executive team. That is, the general manager, the food and beverage manager, the marketing manager, people like that. But if it was an existing hotel, we certainly wouldn't fire all the maids and all the group desk clerks. We would start with the people that we had and keep the best ones. And if we saw some that were not performing well, we would make changes. But the managers generally came from within our company.